listeners. This is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Maher, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Seattle, Washington, on 1150 AM. This is the second hour of our show. We started at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and it's now 3 p.m. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. We will have only the best psychics and astrologers in the world on our program, and I guarantee it will be the most interesting radio program you've ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you will simply not hear elsewhere. I'm pleased to tell you that we are the fastest-growing psychic and metaphysical radio program in the world, and now we have listeners in over 50 different countries on all the world's continents. I'd like to, in a few minutes, we'll be going to Susan Shumsky, one of the world's most famous spiritualists in New York City. But before we start, I just wanted to tell you quickly that 1 week from today, we will have a world-famous remote viewer and psychic Yuri Geller coming on the show from live from London, England, as well as Tamara Younger on relationships, Lee Moorhead from South Carolina, who's one of the best psychics on the East Coast, Lori Berman, a wonderful psychic from Boston who has her own radio and television program. On August 22nd, we will also have world-famous UFO researcher and author of Chariots of the Gods, Eric von Däniken, who will be coming to us from Switzerland to talk about a new UFO airport he's discovered in Peru. In addition, we will have on August 22nd, Laura Eisenhower, the daughter of President Dwight D. Eisenhower, who will talk about what her father told her about the secret agreement that her father had signed with some reptilian aliens, in which they agreed to give us some of their technology in exchange for them studying us. Finally, at the end of the month, on August 29th, we will have Wilbur Allen on the program. He is a well-known photographer in the Washington, D.C. area who's taken no less than 60,000 to 70,000 images of UFOs taking off in and around Washington, D.C., including those landing and taking off from the lawn of the White House. His interview will be very special because he'll be on for the first hour on August 29th. And on the second hour, that same day, August 29th, we will have two representatives of the Galactic Alliance of Planets who will identify these UFOs from where they're from, especially the ones landing and taking off in the White House lawn. Given the fact that President Eisenhower signed secret agreements with a group of reptilian aliens in 1954, the pictures that Mr. Allen has are likely those from this reptilian race, which regularly visits the White House and President Obama. These shows will coincide with Edward Snowden's leaked NSA memos, which earlier this year said that the U.S. government was actually influenced and controlled by reptilian aliens. This should be truly an out-of-this-world show. You can listen to the show live today at www.1150kknw.com, and afterwards you can always listen to the show at www.outofthisworld1150.com by going to the bottom of the page and clicking on Susan's name. For those in the Seattle area, 1 week from tomorrow, Saturday, August 9th, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., I will be giving psychic readings at the Mill Creek Psychic Fair at 3509 Seattle Hill Road in Snohomish, Washington. And also from Friday, November 21st to Sunday, November 23rd, I will be hosting a psychic fair at Fort Warden in Port Townsend on beautiful Puget Sound. Among the guests coming will be Dr. Masuro Emoto from Tokyo, Japan, as well as Scott Limriel, a Hollywood writer and screen actor, who will talk about benevolent aliens. For those interested in signing up for the conference, please go to my website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. And quickly, on September 7th, Thursday at 7 p.m. at the East West Bookshop in Seattle, my friend Dewey Meyer will be giving a wonderful lecture called Are These Feelings Really Mine? She's a wonderful energy healer, and so I urge you all to go there if you can. And finally, another friend of mine, Judy Taylor, today and tomorrow will be having a wonderful art show and wine tasting over on Bainbridge Island. The best way to reach her and to ask about her event is to call her directly at 425-943-0648. And I think I'll be quiet now and bring on my guest. Susan, are you there? Hello?
Hello, can you hear me? I'm here.
Susan, I wanted to make sure. Wonderful. Well, I want to give a little bit of an intro to Susan. Susan was on my show a couple of months ago, and frankly, I liked her so much, and my listeners, I got so much good feedback from my listeners that they all wanted you back again. So welcome back to the show, Susan, and welcome to Seattle.
Well, thank you so much, and I am thrilled to be with you today.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, I've written up a little biography that I have on my website. If for more information about Susan, please go to my website at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just scroll down to Susan's name on the left side of the page, and you can click right onto her website and the biography. She's been featured in more than 675 media venues, including Women's World Magazine, Cosmopolitan, GQ, Los Angeles Times, Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie, NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox News, and Weird or What with William Shatner. She was also featured in the film Three Magic Words. The 66-year-old adventurer who claims meditation keeps her young has distinguished herself by her striking successes through life on her own terms, with her, through her own inner truths. She's the daughter of a surgeon, a genius IQ, a straight-A student who left her conservative home in 1966 for the infamous hippie mecca Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco. While after learning to meditate while attending art college, she found herself on the river on the riverbanks of the Ganges River in India, where Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, the famous guru of the Beatles and of Deepak Chopra, personally trained her to teach meditation and yoga. For 22 years, she lived in Maharishi's ashrams in remote, secluded areas of the Himalayan mountains of India, the Swiss Alps, in the heartland of America. And for seven of those years, she served on his personal staff. She's received a Doctor of Divinity degree from the Teaching of Institutional Metaphysics, founded by Dr. Peter Meyer of San Diego, and she's begun her own unique style of meditation and spiritual healing. She's written a whole bunch of books, and she was very kind to send me several of them, including The Power of Chakras and The Power of Auras, which I both read both, and a fascinating, just fascinating work she's done. Susan, are you there?
I am here.
Okay, good. Well, for my listeners around the world, Susan, who missed your show a few months ago,
right.
There's a little bit about, you know, how you got started in this, but is there anything else you'd like to add about, like, how you got started to becoming, doing the spiritual work that you do, or how you ended up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I could tell the story. I was a hippie. It was the 1960s. I lived in the San Francisco Bay Area. And probably your listeners may or may not know, but those of us who were flower children, who were hippies at that time, we were really very serious about studying Eastern wisdom, Eastern philosophy. Mm-hmm. And we were seeking spiritual enlightenment. I was reading the Buddhist scriptures. I was reading Paramahansa Yogananda's Autobiography of a Yogi. I was reading The Way of Zen and other books by Alan Watts. And in Alan Watts' books, he said that you need to find a meditation guide. Well, in 1966 in Berkeley, California, you didn't go to the Yellow Pages to find meditation guide or anything remotely similar to meditation or yoga or anything. Mm-hmm. So I asked a roommate, you know, how do I do this? How do I find a meditation guide? And he said, well, have you ever tried to meditate yourself? So I said, well, I'll give it a shot. So I lay down on my bed and I sort of prayed for or asked for a meditation. Immediately, I was propelled into an ecstatic state. I felt this cord or kind of like a ripple or cord of energy flowing through my body, all the way from the tips of my toes to the top of my head. And it felt like I was plugged into an electric socket, but in a very ecstatic way. So I felt this energy rush. And then I said, well, I guess this is meditation. I didn't know any better. I didn't know any different. And little did I know that I had had my first meditation experience and also my first Kundalini awakening all at the same time. Mm-hmm. So that was a profound experience. And then soon after that, I found myself, a friend took me to meditation center where I saw the picture of Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. And I immediately felt like, this is it. You know, I need to learn meditation here. And so I did. Mm-hmm. And then went off with him for many, many years.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Well, you've written extensively about the power of chakras and also about auras as well. And let's go to auras first, if you don't mind. For people who don't know what an aura is, how would you describe it to them for someone who doesn't have any familiarity with it?
Well, the word aura comes from a Greek word that means a breath of air. And the reason why it comes from that root is because our energy field, our human aura, consists of several layers to it. And one of those layers happens to be what we call the pranamaya kosha, or the pranic body or energy body. Prana, the word prana means life force energy, that which is giving us life and which maintains and sustains life in us. And it's also known as chi or ki. Mm-hmm. And it is well known that prana or pranic energy is in the breath. And so that's the reason why it comes from this root saying breath of air.
Oh.
So that is the auric field consists of several layers, actually. And it is our energy field, as I said. And one of those layers is the pranamaya kosha, or the energy body, that which gives life, sustains life, maintains life in this body. It is said that in the ancient scriptures of India, that when prana is in the body, that is defined as life. And when prana leaves the body, that is what is defined as death. So that is one of our subtle bodies. Another one is the mental body, or the manomaya kosha, which is our emotional body. And our senses also are lodged there in the emotional body. Then we have the what we call the vijnanamaya kosha, which is your intellect, ego body. And then we have what's known as the causal body, which is called anandamaya kosha. And that is the body which it is the seat of individuation. So there are five bodies. The physical body is the fifth body. And all those four other layers are your subtle body. And that is your auric field. And when people think of the aura, they think of colors and they think of aura readers, maybe even aura photographs and so on. Well, what they're photographing in the auric photographs, or what the clairvoyants are seeing, is they're seeing your mental emotional body, which consists of various colors that indicate your emotional state, your mental emotional state. So that's the definition of the aura or energy field.
Fascinating, fascinating. I have so many questions. I know we can't cover it all in an hour, but what's a thought form, and how are we influence them, and how can we heal them if there's a thought form?
Yeah, a thought form is a thought or feeling or emotion or intention that has so much power behind it that it actually becomes like a form, not just an idea in the mind or something. So it takes like a subtle form, and it could become so crystallized that we might call it a facade body, which would mean it becomes like a subtle body. And people walk around with these subtle bodies. They could be like armors or masks that people wear. So a thought form is just basically a very powerful thought that manifests into a form.
Interesting. Now, can you, for example, have could it happen, for example, in childhood, you were told stupid, for example, and then that could happen. That happened to me when I was a kid. I was said I was stupid, so I rebelled by getting all these degrees and everything.
well,
that was my rebellion.
Yeah,
and I think I'm still learning today. It's actually set me on a course of a lifelong of learning, which is good. So it was a very positive thing, actually, for being called stupid. But I wouldn't recommend any parents out there to call their kids stupid, because it's not a very nice thing. But what if, for example, a young lady, a little girl, is told over and over by their parents that they're ugly? Of course, when she gets older, then she thinks she's ugly, even though she may be one of the most beautiful women in the world.
It's exactly. Right. That's a thought form, definitely.
How can we heal something like that? I mean, to go directly to the thought form and then reverse, throw it out?
Sort of. There is something that I call the thought form healing prayer or thought form healing affirmation, which is simply something like this. You would say something like this: I now call upon the Holy Spirit to lovingly heal and release any and all thought, feelings, and emotions that no longer serve me. I now release any and all thoughts of, for example, being stupid, or thoughts of ugly, you know, whatever thoughts you need to heal personally. And then you'd go on in the prayer and you'd say, and these are gone. These are lifted into the light of God's love and truth. And I now welcome, accept, and embrace into my life positive, powerful thoughts and feelings of inner beauty, inner strength, self-authority, self-love. You would say the opposite of what of that negative feeling that you had said earlier, in other words. And then you'd continue with the prayer, I know that I am in control. I am the only authority in my life. I am divinely protected by the light of my being. Thank you, God. And so it is. So you'd say something like that. And by the way, that prayer is in, well, it's in all of my books, almost all of my books. It is in the book, The Power of Auras. It is in the book, The Power of Chakras. It is in my book, Instant Healing. Instant Healing actually consists of 243 positive affirmations and prayers that are really, really powerful and that change people's lives.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I know my many readers and listeners around the world love to get a copy of that. And what is your website, please, again, if you could?
The website is drsusan.org, drsusan.org is my website. Okay. And also you can get my books on Amazon.com. Just look for the name Shumsky, Susan Shumsky, Shumsky, on Amazon.com. Search under books and I have 10 books in print as of right now.
Only 10?
Yeah, only 10. Only 10.
And you can also, my many listeners, you can also go to my show website at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just scroll down to Susan's name and I'll go right to her website too and her wonderful books. For those who are just tuning in, you're listening to Out of This World Radio International with your host Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of Bellevue in Seattle, Washington on 1150 AM and here on KKNW. I want to give out the phone number real quick for those who want to call in with any questions. It's one of those phone numbers. Here it is. We'll be taking calls in about 10 minutes, but the phone number here in the studio is 425-373-5527. Again, that's 425-373-5527. Or we have a toll-free number, but within Western Washington in the Seattle area, at 1-888-298-5569. Susan, I have to ask you this question. Around you, I see this beautiful white light. You're protected by a whole bunch of angels. Plus, I see yellow as well. And yellow refers to the seeking of knowledge, isn't it? Happiness?
Yes, I'm trying to think. As a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Intellect.
So I see, wonderful. So you're very intellectual, very intelligent, very educated. So I see the yellow around you. Plus, I see you're protected by white light from a whole bunch of angels, and they're extremely happy with your work. And also, they're happy that you're so happy you're on the show today. And I just want to let you know that they're telling me this is a joke, not really a joke, but you have got lots of friends in very high places.
So. That's true, I do. I've got a lot of really good friends in high places. I do, I admit it.
You know what, Brandon Brinkley's another psychic from Nevada. He's really good. A couple of months ago, he's on my
he's
show.
He's a friend of mine.
Oh, cool. You know what he said?
What did he say?
He said most of his friends are dead.
Most of his friends are dead.
They all love the spirits. Love that. I mean, you know, I mean,
it's really funny.
You know, and the thing is, you know, it's kind of funny if you talk when you talk to the other side. It's like if you disagree with them, it's kind of like a joke saying, "Well, what are you going to do? Kill me? They're already dead." So it's kind of difficult to do that.
Right. Exactly.
Well, for many of my friends and listeners around the world, you know, times are tough. There's a lot of conflicts around the world. And but when you see colors around a person, what does each color mean? I know white is angelic light. Yellow is for intellect and thinking. If you see colors like green, what does green mean?
Well, green is like the healing color. It's the color of nature. Mm-hmm. And someone who has green in their aura, they might be even in the healing profession, possibly, mm-hmm. or they might be on a healing path. They may be focused on healing, or they might even be someone who's very close to nature, who really loves to be outdoors and kind of a nature lover, that sort of thing. Wonderful. Green is a very wonderful color. It's a very beautiful color.
If you want to help someone heal, let's say for people who are sick out there, is it useful to send them the color green? Can you do that through intention? Is that possible, or to have them visualize green around them?
Mm-hmm. You absolutely can. You could send green, which is helpful, especially if it's a physical problem. You could also send other really spiritual colors like white light or golden light, or the violet cleansing, transmuting flame, all-consuming flame of Saint Germain. These are some beautiful colors. The blue light also is a wonderful spiritual light to send people. So, you know, a lot of good colors there to help people with their pathway or help them to heal.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, about a third of my listeners in Seattle are healthcare professionals, doctors, nurses. So I know that they're listening, and so this particular discussion is very, very useful for them. And I know that they must be interested in the spiritual side of life since they're listening to to this program. By the way, in your Power of Auras book, you have a wonderful chart on page 126 about the different colors and spiritual characteristics of the different colors. And would you say too, when you're doing this spiritual work, to trust your intuition as to what you feel about people and from a spiritual side when you meditate?
Right. And the thing is that anyone can see auras.
Mm-hmm.
Many people can see auras better with their eyes closed than with their eyes open. And many people can see auras by feeling rather than actually seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And some people see auras by hearing rather than seeing. So don't get too stuck on this whole idea that you have to be clairvoyant in order to sense auras, because we're all sensing auras all the time. For example, if you first meet a person, you get a sense of what that person's like immediately. You can kind of feel their vibration. Is this person an angry person, an uptight person, a loving, benevolent kind of person? Do they have a warm feeling? Do they have a coldness? What are you feeling from that person? Are you feeling anger? Are you feeling defensiveness, you know? So you can sense somebody's auric field without ever being clairvoyant at all. And you can read auras that way, and you can get a sense of people and what they need, you know. Does this person need more love? Does this person need to feel more confident? Can you help them with that? Can you tell them something that's going to make them feel better?
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I want to go on, if you don't mind, to the next subject, which is your book about power of chakras.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who don't know anything about chakras, if you could give a thumbnail sketch in 20 words or less about the 7 different chakras or 14 different chakras you talk about in your book.
Right. In my book, The Power of Chakras, when my publisher asked me to write this book, I went back to the ancient scriptures of India to find the most authentic information that I could find on the subject. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, they talk about 14 chakras. There's the seven major ones, and then there's seven more. And the major ones are the base chakra at the base of the spine, and then the sacral chakra, which is in your sexual area, the navel chakra, which is obviously in your navel area, the heart chakra, the throat chakra, the third eye chakra, and the crown chakra, which is above your head. But then there's seven other ones, and those are, most of them are in your head. And then there's one that's the lower heart chakra called the Hrit chakra. So there's 14 major chakras that are talked about, like I said, in the scriptures of India. I went back to the Vedic and the Tantric scriptures and found just the most esoteric, amazing information that you'll ever want to ever, anything you ever wanted to know about chakras is in this book. Other people who write about chakras, like Anna Diajudith, you know, this is like a textbook for them. They send people to me, anyone who really is serious and wants to learn everything about the chakra system, you know, they read my book or they send them to me, because this book is just so amazing. I mean, it's so esoteric and it's so detailed, and it just goes into every single chakra. There's actually a chapter on every one of these, a separate chapter for every one of these 14 chakras, plus a lot more in the book, you know. And yeah, it's a really amazing book and highly esoteric.
Well, I have to tell you, I find it highly fascinating. All of this is fascinating. It's just fascinating. It leads me to lots of questions. I think we have if we have a caller online, please hold on for a second. I just want to ask Susan something here. For many of the health care professionals out there who, for example, have people who are depressed that come into their office and they readily prescribe these antidepressants, which often cause a lot of trouble with people, have their own problems with it. Do you think that's related to perhaps damaged chakras or damaged auras, that they need more help on a spiritual sense than perhaps just taking a bunch of drugs?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I agree with you wholeheartedly in that many of the so-called mental illnesses or emotional problems that people have can be found in their energy field and can be healed through very simple methods of affirmation and prayer that I teach in my books. Mm-hmm. And I think that it would really behoove healthcare professionals to learn more about spiritual healing and to not be dependent entirely upon the drugs, because especially if it's an emotional problem, it's really easy to heal that kind of thing through prayer and affirmation. And my book, Instant Healing, I mean, I'm not kidding when I say instant healing. And I even got an email yesterday from somebody who said when they first heard about my book, Instant Healing, they thought, oh, well, you know, that's impossible. That's ridiculous. You know, they're complete skeptics. But then when they started using the book, they realized how instant a healing can be.
Sure.
Because you could be in a really depressed, gloomy state. And if you use a specific kind of affirmation and prayer that really deals with what it is that you're concerned about or what the real cause is behind that depression or whatever, it can be healed instantly and you'll immediately feel better. You'll immediately feel more positive, more powerful, more stronger, greater inner strength, and you'll feel a lot of hope. You'll feel like, oh, I can really cope with my life. You know, I no longer have to be under this gloomy black cloud. I can actually go out there and do something productive today.
Well, I think the entire planet is undergoing a shift into the fifth dimension. And the work that you do, Susan, is particularly important for that, because you lead the way as far as spiritual healing and spiritual growth for people. And I'll make a prediction on air now that within 20 to 25 years, the kind of work that you do in spiritual healing for people will eventually become part of mainstream medicine in the medical schools, which now a lot of practitioners perhaps don't do that, but I think they should at least look at it anyway, because if you want to treat the whole patient, you want to look at them not only from giving them lots of drugs, but also from looking at them from a spiritual side of life, which is, in my opinion, the most important part of a person's life.
Yes, and it is the cause behind the cause behind the cause of all illness. The emotional, mental, emotional factor is very, very important because it is what has manifested on the physical level as illness.
Absolutely.
And people like Larry Dossey have really led the way in reference to spiritual healing, using prayer, for example, for spiritual healing. And, you know, I would encourage all healthcare professionals to really learn a lot more about using the power of your word in prayer and other methods that I teach in my books, The Power of Auras, The Power of Chakras. I actually go back and refer to very ancient methods of breathing methods called pranayama, bandhas, which are muscular locks, asanas, which are postures. Ancient yogic practices can be very, very beneficial when dealing with all kinds of problems, emotional or physical problems.
Absolutely right. Eric, do we have a caller?
We do. We've got Carol in Kent.
Carol,
on
welcome to the show.
Hi, Ted. Hi, Susan. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, wonderful. It's so nice of you to call in. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you. I wanted to ask Susan, when I meditate, and I've done this for years, I don't know if I knew what I was doing, but I would just sit quietly and do it. I did used to get answers, you know, that would come through to me. And for the last probably 10 years, I've been blocked. I'm not getting answers, but I am seeing people's eyes. Like, I'll just see a side of a face. I haven't gotten answers telepathically like I used to get before, but I can see people's eyes looking at me, like just one eye, not the whole face, and it's very warm and loving. But there's okay. They're actually looking at me, but they're not telling me anything. And so I was kind of wondering what I can do to unblock myself and what that means.
So in other words, if I'm understanding correctly, you used to be able to get telepathic methods. You used to be able to hear an inner voice speaking to you, or is that what you're saying? But now
yeah.
All you see is some visual impressions of like an eyes looking at you.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the fact is you can ask for them to speak to you. I mean, it's really important that you realize that you can actually have a dialogue with beings of light, for example, divine beings, deities, angels, archangels, ascended masters. You can ask them. If you want to begin to receive telepathic messages again, you can ask for them to do that. So you're not powerless in this situation. It's something that you really do have to ask for. And my motto in all spiritual work is ask and it shall be given unto you. So you can ask for the message, you can ask a question, you can ask for the message to be given to you with words, or you can ask, what does this mean? You can always ask for more clarification, and then just be willing to receive the answer. Now, my method for receiving is very simple. Take very deep breaths, and take more deep breaths, and take even more deep breaths, and get into a very quiet state. The deep breaths will really take you into a very quiet state. And then just get quiet and still and centered within yourself and just be in a very receptive and still state. And then ask. At that point, ask. Ask for the guidance. Ask to receive whatever it is that you want to receive. Ask for understanding of why you're seeing the eyes and what the eyes mean. You know, have a dialogue and begin to communicate with that being who is trying to get through to you.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. That helps out a lot.
Yes, don't be passive in this. Be an active member of this dialogue.
Okay, great.
Okay, well, thank you so much for calling in, Carol. Really appreciate
your
listening. Eric, do we have any other callers?
Not at this time.
All righty. Well, anyway, I have to ask you, Susan, about the history of this knowledge. Now, India is a very rich country in terms of its history in religion and culture. Do you think according to some legends, Lemuria was actually in India many, many years ago. Do you think this knowledge came from Lemuria, or where do you think the origins of all this body of knowledge came from?
Well, you know, I was in Lemuria.
Okay.
I remember being in Lemuria. I believe cool. It was somewhere in the Atlantic area. And uh-huh. I'm sorry, not Atlantic. Excuse me. Pacific, in the Pacific mm-hmm. Ocean area. Mm-hmm. According to my feeling about where it did take place was in the Pacific area. And there was a different geographical configuration of the Earth at that time. The Pacific Ocean wasn't completely underwater. That area wasn't completely underwater. There was a big continent called Lemuria, uh-huh. and it was where the Pacific Ocean is now, somewhere in that area, uh-huh. and not in India. But India is definitely a place where incredible spiritual knowledge is being held and has been held for a very, very long time. And there are two main areas, actually, in the world, in our world, not in the old ancient Lemuria Atlantean world, but in our world today, the two main areas where there is sacred knowledge being held is in India and in the Himalayas, in that area, and then in the Andes in South America. And the Andean mountains are really more of a feminine energy. And the Himalayan mountains are more of a masculine energy. So there's like a polarity on our planet of the masculine, feminine in those two mountain ranges.
Interesting. Is this exhibited through the culture in Ladakh area, right next to Tibet? I'm just curious. And Tibet itself?
Yes, very much so. And as you may notice, most of the spiritual leaders of India and Tibet and so forth have always been male, you know, for a very long time. I'm not saying that it's exclusively male, but a lot of it is. It's a very male energy. It's a very patriarchal kind of society as well.
Sure.
And there has been, of course, in the Andean region, there's just a more of a feminine energy.
Interesting. Have you been to the Andes area?
I certainly have, yes. As a matter of fact, another thing that I do is I offer tours and retreats to sacred destinations and also cruise ship seminars and different conferences and things that I arrange. And every year for the June solstice, I have a trip that goes to the Andes, that goes to Peru, and I have an incredible shamanic a person named Malku, him and his wife, they are amazing. And he's actually very scholarly. He's written all the books that the Andean guides use to explain the different sacred sites of Peru. He wrote all those books. He's the one that found everything in the Andes, all these amazing phenomena in the Andes of the shadows that are cast at these sacred places like Machu Picchu and other places.
Oh, fascinating.
In the Sacred Valley and so on. And he wrote the book. I mean, he wrote the books that explain all of that. And other people, they learn from him, really. They read his books and they pretend like they're the ones that are the big experts. But he is, in fact, the one that found all this. And he leads my tours to Peru, so it's pretty amazing.
I lived in India during the late 80s and 90s for about 2.5 years. My base was in New Delhi. Yeah, I had a series of Fulbright grants where I studied law in India. As part of my trips, I went up to Ladakh. And one of the amazing things, Ladakh itself is an average of anywhere between 11,000 feet above sea level. And when you get up to, I can't remember the capital of Ladakh, Leh, L-E-H. And when I was in Leh, the colors are very vibrant. I mean, the reds are redder. I think Leh in Ladakh is about 9,000 or 10,000 feet elevation. And at that elevation, the blues are bluer, the greens are greener, the yellows are more yellow. It's all the colors you see in that city are far more brighter. The blues are bluer. It's just an incredible experience. And then, of course, I visited a whole bunch of different Tibetan monasteries around the area. And I was struck by the way people were so happy, and they had such intense they had such intense spiritual knowledge. I wasn't there very long, but it was enough to get a nice taste of it. I was going to ask, I don't mean to put you on the spot, Susan, but are you doing anything November 21st through the 23rd this year?
I don't remember what date. I'm supposed to be in Houston for something on that date, around that time in November. I don't remember which date it is, though, in November.
Oh. Okay, well, we have a psychic conference and workshops going on November 21st through the 23rd, and it's at a beautiful old state park called Fort Worden State Park. We've reserved a large wing there. It's right next to Port Townsend. It's about an hour and a half from Seattle. I'd like to welcome you there if you'd like to come out. We will be Dr. Masaru Emoto is coming in from Tokyo for the event. Scott mm-hmm. Lemriel, a friend of mine who's had contact with benevolent aliens for the last 50 years will be coming as well. And if you could come, we'd just love to have you. But I don't mean to put you on the spot. It's something I've been meaning to call you about. And I
that
just
sounds
thought
great.
Now,
so, yeah. Send me an email about it and with all the details, and then I'll see what's going on with my calendar.
Okay.
For November.
Okay. I'll do that. I'll do that.
Please do.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. For those who are just tuning in, by the way, this is Out of This World Radio International with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW here in Bellevue, Seattle, Washington, in North America. We're talking to one of the world's best spiritualists, in my opinion, Susan Shumsky, coming to us live by telephone from New York City. Susan, for people who are just tuning in and might be interested in the Kundalini and in yoga, what is that for people who don't know about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, the word kundal comes from a Sanskrit root which means curled up. So mm-hmm. it's a curled up or coiled up energy that's at the base of your spine. And the ancient scriptures of India say that it's curled up in 3.5 coils and mm-hmm. that it is this feminine energy and mm-hmm. this very powerful pranic energy. Prana, we talked about prana a little earlier. Prana is the life force energy. That is that which gives you life, which sustains your life in your body. But there's one specific kind of pranic energy that's called kundalini, which is lodged in your root chakra, or mm-hmm. your what we call the muladhara chakra, which is at the base of your spine. And it is, in average individuals, it is asleep. It is said in the ancient scriptures of India that its head is downwards. That means it's asleep. And if a person begins to practice any kind of spiritual practices, such as meditation or pranayama, pranic breathing exercises or yoga exercises, or other types of spiritual work, such as prayer, affirmation, those types of things, kundalini will begin to rise. And it rises through the center of your spine and through an energy conduit that's in your subtle body. That energy conduit is called Sushumna Nadi. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Sushumna Nadi is just the pathway of Kundalini, through which Kundalini mm-hmm. flows from the base of your spine all the way to above the top of your head. And as it rises up your spine, it awakens your chakras. It kind of wakes them up and energizes them. And also, it brings you spiritual awakening. It brings greater clairvoyant, clairaudient, clairsentient powers. It opens up your spiritual gifts. And mm-hmm. then you become more awakened, more enlightened, more able to experience the divine presence. And so kundalini is a very powerful energy. And for most people, it just isn't awake. It's kind of lying there dormant at the base of the spine. But I am certain that anyone who's listening to this program, their kundalini has been awakened to a great degree, or you wouldn't even be interested in this topic.
Oh, fascinating, fascinating. I have to tell you, when I was living in India, that I heard stories of shamans and spiritual leaders in the Himalayas being able to travel, astral travel, by awakening their kundalini. Is that's what you've heard too from your work?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things that Kundalini indicates. It indicates higher consciousness. It indicates that a person is developed spiritually. Mm-hmm. Kundalini, the energy itself, I don't know that that's really the way that people astral travel. Astral travel has to do with separating your pranic, your pranamaya kosha, your pranic body, from your physical body, and flying around in that subtle body. In other words, what you're doing is your subtle body is detaching itself from the physical body, where usually it is pretty much confined to the physical body. And right. when you're astral traveling, you're flying around. So that's why people get these dreams at night. Oh, I'm flying. Well, your astral traveling is what you're doing. I mean, during sleep, your astral traveling is totally natural for people to be astral traveling at night during sleep. And that's usually experienced as a flying dream. And then at the end of that dream, often there'll be a jolt back into the body, basically. You feel like you're falling. You fall back into the body is what happens. So your subtle body, which has detached from your physical body, suddenly, wow, bam, you're back in the body. And you feel like you've just fallen. You've fallen back into the body.
Interesting. Could you imagine?
Often in sleep, during sleep, you'll feel like you're tripping or falling. And that's also the astral body is moving. You're tripping back. You were flying, and now suddenly you dropped or you fell.
Interesting. Could you imagine if everyone was able to do astral traveling that probably the airline industry in the United States would collapse because everybody would be able to travel out of their body and go wherever they wanted to.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
They could travel to San Francisco in the morning to have breakfast and then go over to New York to see the Empire State Building in the afternoon and finally end up in London in the evening for another cup of tea or something.
Absolutely.
So,
except for it's not your physical body, so you wouldn't be having breakfast or having tea.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You'd be just traveling in your mind. Well, I'm sure many people out there have had dreams where they've traveled different places. I know about 2 weeks ago, I found myself walking for miles on a country road outside of Galway, Ireland. And it was a rainy night, and I know I do have listeners in Ireland listening to the show now. So I just wanted to tell you I had a wonderful time. I had a wonderful walk. I walked for miles on this country road, and it was a drizzle. It was very green, but it was dark at one night, and I met lots of interesting, nice Irish people, and I don't think I quite made it to Galway that night. Maybe I'll have to go back there again and do some more astral traveling. But it was it was a nice
sounds
dream.
Lovely. Sounds like a nice trip.
Well, I think we've had a string of days here where it's been 115, 118, 110 degrees in eastern Washington, where I have a home. And I think I dreamt about walking in this cool place full of drizzle because it felt so delightful to be
really?
Chilly. Yeah, just to be chilly. I mean, it's no fun to be outside when it's that hot. It's gotten so hot. It's gotten so hot. A couple of places and restaurants, what they've done is that they simply push the food out on the sidewalk in the morning, and by afternoon it's already cooked, and they bring it in. You know, so, not a big deal.
Right. Fry the eggs on the sidewalk.
So fried eggs on the sidewalk. Pot roast, no problem. Slow cook, just put it on the sidewalk. It cooks by itself. So. So I guess there's some advantages of having 120 degree heat here. It's kind of tough. We've got about 4 minutes left, Susan, and I wanted to ask you a couple more questions with the chakras. You've made some fascinating connections between the chakra colors, the days of the week, and the planets associated with the chakras. For my many listeners around the world, could you please talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. Okay, so Sunday is the day of the sun, and that would be red color.
Okay.
And Monday would be day of the moon, moon day, Monday, day of the moon. That would be, you want to know the chakras also. I'm sorry. So let's go back to Sunday. Sunday would be the solar plexus, obviously, sun, solar plexus. That would be your navel chakra. That would be the color red. and that would be the day of the sun, Sunday. Mm-hmm. Moonday, day of the moon, that would be your sacral chakra or your sex chakra. Okay. Obvious, that's associated with the moon. Moon is associated with fertility. That would be the orange color.
So if you want to highlight that, would you be advised if you're going on a date to have a date on Monday versus another day of the week, or?
Yeah, if you want to get pregnant, yeah, definitely go on Monday.
All right.
Tuesday would be Mars Day or Mardi in French, okay. Or in Spanish, it also sounds similar. And that would be Mars Day. That would be the yellow color, and that would be Tuesday. Okay. And that would be what chakra would that be? That would be your base chakra, your Muladhara chakra, your base chakra. Mm-hmm. And then we go to Wednesday. Wednesday would be Mercredi or Mercury Day. That would be the French version of Mercury Day. And that's Wednesday. That would be the green color, and that would be the crown chakra above your head.
Oh,
the next day would be Thursday, Jeudi or Jupiter Day. Which was Thursday, and that would be the blue color, and that would be your third eye or your brow or eyebrow chakra. And then Friday would be Vendredi, that's the French word, which is Venus Day. And Venus Day would be Friday, and that would be the indigo color, and that would be which chakra would that be? That would be your throat chakra, which is your chakra of expression, artistic expression and so on. So that would be Venus Day.
Interesting.
And then Saturn Day. Saturday is Saturn Day. And that would be the magenta or violet color. And that would be your heart chakra. And then we have the... Well, that's it. Seven. There's seven. There they are.
Wonderful. 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 We've got about a little more than a minute left, and I just want to say to my many listeners around the world, thank you so much for listening. Susan, I want you to give the final words on your wonderful interview today, but I just wanted to tell my many friends and listeners around the world that 1 week from today, we will have Yuri Geller on the show live from London, England. He's one of the world's best remote viewers, as well as Tamara Younger on relationships on the show. And we have about a minute left, and I want you to please wrap everything up, Susan.
Okay, well, I just want to let you know about my website, which is drsusan.org. If you go to my website, you will find that you can read the first chapter of all my books, and you can listen to free teleseminars and interviews. There's a lot of things on that website, drsusan.org. And also my travel website, which is divinetravels.com. Divine Travels, that's a plural on the travels, divinetravels.com. That's divinetravels.com. And there you can find out about the tours and retreats to wonderful places. And we have cruise ship seminars that are going on. Just really fun, awesome opportunities for enrichment, for spiritual awakening, and for also travel. It's really great. It's a great way to travel, to go to spiritual places.
Wonderful. Well, Susan, thank you so much for being on the show. And to my many listeners around the world, thank you so much for listening. And your support and interest in spiritual things and psychic things is really appreciated. I hope you all, everyone around the world, has a wonderful weekend. Bye-bye, everyone. Bye-bye, Susan.